One, two, three, four. Just another day at my dead-end profession. I'm living day to day. Yeah, listening to some good old country records on the radio. And yeah, what else can I say?
Thanks for coming back to the show. All three of us are back again.
Woo!
So, Dave, how you feeling? I know you were sick a couple times.
Yeah, better now, although it's settled into a nice sinus infection. So that's
oh, good. Those are glorious.
Yeah.
Hey, I tried shrooms for the first time.
Did you really?
Speaking of holy shit. Sick. Right. Dude, you know what? Not my favorite drug. Didn't like it very much. I felt like the two times I did them, I did them twice, 2 weeks in a row, just to
see. Same batch? Same batch of mushrooms?
Yeah.
Okay, and, that might be a factor.
And technically, I would advise, you know, space it out. Let your serotonin rebalance and everything. But anyway, so tell us about these experiences. Were they done in a proper context? Did you prepare for it?
Yeah.
You knew it was going to happen? You were in a good spot with good people?
My setting was here. I wanted to do them alone with my wife in my house, which is my safe space.
Okay.
Right. I don't like people.
That's how I used to do it.
People make me nervous.
Yeah. I'm the same way on hallucinogenics. Not necessarily at home. I want to be with the people that I trust in a place that I'm comfortable.
I wanted to make sure if there's a nuclear option and something bad happened, I could run into my bed and pull the covers over my head, you know, and not be judged. So anyways, the first time I took two of them. You know, I was told to start with...
You didn't
with
the, weigh them? You just took the actual... Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's not nearly enough, but all right, go ahead.
Well, see, in my experience, I've done a lot of mushrooms. It depends on the batch. Sometimes a couple will get you really fucking going. Sometimes it takes like 9 or 10 to feel anything.
I guess. It's usually done by weight.
You guys, what's my least favorite food?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So IPAs. they forced you IPAs.
These taste like... mushrooms fucked an IPA.
Yes.
Yeah, and then a stick got involved at some places.
Oh, yeah.
They're all
it's
dry.
The worst flavor.
So I had to wrap them in a quesadilla and drizzle hot sauce on, and still I'm like, oh god. Because like the second time I did it, I had like 4 or 5, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
So I'm like, so after I'd ingested these both times, like first of all, my stomach felt sick from these things. And it was like, you know, we're looking up on the internet as we're eating. I'm like, how much we should take? And there's like, oh, yeah, we need way more. I'm like, oh, I can't do that. Anyway, first time I took them, Friday night, sitting home alone. After 2 hours and me almost falling asleep watching TV, I'm like, I was cursing the creep that burned us. And I'm like, you know what? These don't work. Let's go to bed. Aaron and I go to bed. We turn on the TV. We were watching Unsolved Mysteries, which I talked about last week.
All right. Oh, dear Lord.
And... that's when I realized that's the funniest show that's ever been in existence, and I couldn't stop laughing.
Okay.
And you know what? It was kind of a good time. Just I giggled. I didn't see shit. I may have had a little bit of I think that I experienced what people who weed works for experience when they smoke weed. I had a body high. Yeah. I laughed a lot, and I had a great night's sleep.
This sounds fantastic. I don't know why you're
that was that was okay, but in order to do that, I had to eat some really expensive mushrooms that didn't taste good.
You didn't eat enough. You didn't prepared enough. Next time, much like you are the chef and you make us some very good food, at some point I will make you mushrooms that taste good.
Okay.
I'm in on this.
Okay.
All right.
I like this idea, actually.
Second time, horrible experience. We took more a week later.
Yep. Where were you this time?
Same setting. Okay. We want to experience like seeing shit. We want the whole thing.
Okay.
And then once we mastered these, we'll take them out on the road. Okay.
Right. Okay.
So
it's a good plan. I like that strategy.
Yeah. So second time took just as long, even with more. Then we even put like made some tea as on top of that.
Right.
So we had an adequate amount. I'd say between the four we ate and then the like the real big bag of stems that went into the tea, probably eating like 6 each. Okay.
Okay. Were you just eating the caps or were you eating the stems?
Caps and stems.
Yeah. Okay.
Took forever, and then we just got horrible anxiety. We weren't seeing shit. We weren't having irrational thoughts. It was just like, oh man, it was like waking up with an alcohol hangover on Monday morning, having to go into work, and just that first 4 hours of
I've never experienced on mushrooms.
I can see where it comes from though, because the feeling comes over you very strongly. It usually starts from your stomach and comes over you. And if you don't have somebody there that's very helpful as a guide, and that's one of your first times trying it, I can definitely see where that can happen.
Okay.
But that doesn't, just so you know, that doesn't have to be every one of your experiences. And you know, if we ever go and do this together, I'm a good guide. Will help you calm you down in that sense.
Okay. So next thing
I really think that you need to do it again. I think these two count as one experiment because they're so close together, the same batch.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
That and give yourself at least a few weeks break just to kind of let your brain chemistry balance back.
I see. Okay. So Next thing, and by the way, both times I did this, this is what Dave being sick reminded me of it, is as I went to sleep, and throughout the night of sleeping on mushrooms, I felt like I had a glorious flu, where I was just like, I was shivering and cold, and then I was too hot. And I was shivering and cold, and I couldn't really, like, and it felt like I was on flu medicine,
right.
Because I was just so deeply into sleep, I could process that I was asleep, but I couldn't wake up.
How long after it started taking effect did you choose to go to sleep?
Hour or two.
Oh no, that's way, your problem right there. You can't do that. You got at least a 6-hour window, or you don't go to sleep.
Yeah, well, yeah, 6 hours.
I found that out the second time.
Okay, all right.
Because I was not able to go to sleep the second time. The second time, I've done some pretty hard drugs in my time. Right. I had worse trouble sleeping on these mushrooms than I did on cocaine.
Yes.
I was like, I would close my eyes, and then a very panicked vision would hit me, and I'd wake up like, that was terrible. And every time I'd drift off, something inside of me would jar me awake with just alarming images, one of which was T.J. Miller's head on spider legs coming running at me going, I'm like, oh my, I'm like, Aaron, turn the TV back on. So we just
T.J. Miller's on TV.
No! Anyways, it was 6 hours of just anxiety and not being able to sleep and not having any fun and no body high. I giggled for 10 minutes. Oh, here's the worst part. They would come and go. I hate that any drug that comes and goes while you're on it, because you're like, oh, I'm stone sober. No, I'm not.
Yeah.
Yep. No, this isn't any fun. This is boring.
And I don't think it actually comes and goes. You're just so high you think it is. You're like, I'm totally sober. Meanwhile, it's what you were talking about before. You're standing naked in the guest room for no reason.
Yeah,
well, that's how mushrooms work for me too. Like waves. Like comes in waves.
Yeah, a few things. One is never ever take mushrooms if you intend on sleeping anytime in the next 6 hours. You always plan your day so that you are not intending to sleep. So if that means you start at 8 a.m. in the morning or you start at 6 p.m. at night, just know you're not going to sleep for a minimum of 6 hours after that. And if you try to, you're going to have a bad time.
Okay.
That's in general. And it has to do with the way mushrooms react with your brain and the parts of the brain it stimulates and turns off will make it so that not only will you not be able to sleep, but attempting to sleep usually causes a negative reaction.
How about a swimming pool situation in the sun?
I don't know about swimming. I feel like maybe if you just had a little bit, but there are times when I've had enough hallucinogens that I would not want to be depending on my survival. Like, I wouldn't want at some point I'd be like, you know what? I think I can breathe water. And then it would
Okay. All right. So I didn't do enough. I did them at the wrong time of day, and I did them too close together.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, one thing that used to help us, too, when I used to do them when I was married, we would always get, like, some, I guess you'd call it kindling. Like, we would put on some National Geographic on TV with the bright colors and shit like that.
Yeah.
We'd get some toys, like little cush balls, like brightly colored. And so that would sort of
I like that term, by the way, kindling. Yeah. That's really good.
Just to sort of get the visuals going.
I had something similar. I didn't have as clever a name for it, but there's a movie called Baraka, which is like...
Yes, we watched that,
Yes, that's
right. For me, the thing is, I get these placebo visions the whole time. I'm like, oh, it's really happening. No.
Most of the time, I have not had a lot of visual experiences with mushrooms. It does maybe little bits and little things.
It made the colors sharper for a while.
Yeah. That kind of stuff. I don't have full-on visual hallucinations. It's more of the mental mind state and how you feel and where you are and the different perspectives you have on yourself and your thoughts and your personality and stuff.
Right.
That, to me, is the importance of mushrooms. Maybe all the times I've done it, maybe I've had a few visual things that are very slight.
Baraka is very good to watch.
Yes!
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's opposed to like something like a salvia or a DMT where it's all visual stuff that is going to hit you and it's going to hit you really hard.
And one thing to consider, I don't know, Bobby, if you've tried this or know anything about this, one of the times we've tried mushrooms, we put them in a blender with orange soda just because it tastes so bad.
Yeah.
So we could just drink it. And it hit us so much faster and so much harder.
Yeah, because you've done a lot of the digestion for your body.
Yeah.
It's already browned up. Yeah,
and so maybe something to consider for the next time if you want to just really get into it.
Yeah, and you want to go with like an eighth. You want to do your measuring everything out and don't do it by the caps or whatever. It's much better to kind of do it as a scientist and make sure you got
an eighth each?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes. And that's... Yeah, that's a decent dose, but that wouldn't be considered a very big dose. That wouldn't be like a crazy out-of-the-way dose. That, you know, that's the equivalent of the 4 to 5 beer night, you know, for your average person.
All right. Well, anyway, let's move it on. Bobby, on my bull slip here, you mentioned that you had an old man moment.
Oh, my God, dude. I'm only in my 30s. I'm already starting to have these moments where you're like, it's what I call the get off my lawn moments, where you realize you're like, oh, man, I have become the old man.
Right.
Mine is I'm going to be teaching a course this fall at UCSD. It's going to be a field school, so I'm taking all these students out, and we're doing all the prep work. So I'm working with a UCSD professor, and we're going in there, and we're talking to the students. And as somebody who loved archaeology when I was in school and was in their position, getting ready to go on my field school, which is a big part of your college career.
Going and stealing artifacts from indigenous tribes.
From if you're an archaeologist, a big part is going on your field school. That's a big deal. I remember getting super excited. I was going to go to Peru.
I thought you were going to say suicidal.
Yeah,
I'm going to fuck this up.
I remember getting sued.
I remember getting super excited. At the time, Peru was a really dangerous place. There were some terrorist organizations operating there. We're going in kind of a lawless land. We're going to do all this kind of dangerous
stuff. I've seen Raiders of the Lost Ark. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Paddington Bears from there. It's a messed up place. They have bears and trench coats.
I remember being like a 19-year-old kid, and that was the exciting part. It was like, yeah, we're going to go we're going to be swashbucklers. We're going to go out. We're going to go off to this lawless land. We're going to have fun. Like, that's the fun part. Yeah, we're going to do some science, and that's going to be neat too. But there has to be like this fun element, and I really enjoy that, and so did everybody around me. And we were in this meeting, and people were asking questions, and they're like, we were talking about field archaeology and that kind of stuff, and I think the professor said, like, nobody's ever died. And I was like, well, actually, we had a bio die on a job one time, which was true. He fell off a rock or something, his own idiot fault. But and his eyes got really wide, and all the kids all of a sudden, like, froze up. And I was like, it's okay, you know, hundreds of people working, you know, people are going to die. It's like, you're way more likely to die in a car ride.
It's okay. We're going to go avenge his death on this trip. Yeah.
And I was like, it just happened.
We're going to go find his body. Never been found.
P.S. He made a stupid mistake. It was his own fault. He stepped backwards off a huge rock face cliff. That happens if you're just being dumb. It's going to be fine.
So that's a mistake, you're saying.
But yeah, right. But all of a sudden, we had to like calm everybody down. And then later, the professor was like, hey, you really shouldn't say stuff like that. You're going to freak the kids out. And I was like, are you kidding me? That would have gotten me psyched when I was 19. Like, somebody died? Sweet, let's go.
Yeah, there's an element of real danger here. This is not a simulation.
And literally, all the kids got like super scared. And then I had to like send something out saying like, this is a safe project. And where nobody's gonna die, and we're gonna be okay, and here's our safety protocols.
You had a forced apology. Yeah. That's great.
Not even apology, just like, here are our safety protocols, you know, don't call your parents, just all this stuff. And it's like, I've had the old man.
This is the equivalent, the archaeology equivalent of like when someone, like a news anchor on local news doesn't realize the camera's still rolling. He's like, oh, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
What kind of fucking copy is that? And then later on, you see him on there like, that was not representative of our station.
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
And I had this moment, this old man moment, where I like literally turned to the professor and I was like, what is wrong with these kids these days?
See, now for me, I have so many old man triggers. I'm 46.
Yeah.
But that's one of them, is like how fragile these fucking kids are.
Right.
But more so in the terms of criticism.
Yes.
Like these kids have been told all their lives that everything they do is great. They don't make mistakes. And so as soon as they get some actual criticism, like a new first job, something like that,
mm-hmm.
they just break down.
And to be fair, I want to put this out there. I think for the most part, when people go like, kids these days, they're full of shit. I think for the most part, that's not true. I think we over-exaggerate things. We create fictitious things like the Tide Pod Challenge that didn't actually exist to make younger generations look stupid. But there is
Did that not actually exist? Let's talk about that for
a second. No, it didn't really exist. But there is some minute amount of truth to the idea that there is kind of what Dave is talking about, that softening of like, why aren't you excited about the adventure, right? Like, yeah, there's danger, that should make you kind of happy and like, ooh, wow, this is going to be fun.
Yeah. Now, I'm not going to let you get off that easily. Talk more about the Tide Pod Challenge, because I thought until this moment, I thought that was a real thing.
No.
Yeah, me too.
They recycled a video that was from like 2012 or 2013 that like two kids made almost as a joke, and then they're like, this is a new trend going around high schools. And it's like,
it's an epidemic!
First of all, it's not a new trend. Everybody who did that has now graduated college. And second of all, no, it was like three people in the Midwest making a joke.
Yeah, okay, so that was...
But that's crazy how a story like that can gain traction.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean...
Because we have this bias to think like, these new generation of kids, they're dumb.
Well, I think we all have a bias. We all want an enemy to make fun of, and you know, you don't just see it with... that's one we can all unite on, because we all like to think this next generation is dumb. Yeah. It has been for hundreds of years, millions of years. You just hate on the previous one. But you see that all the time with grown-ups versus each other. Like, hey, did you hear these libtards are putting red lights on their porch to signify there's no guns?
Hey.
And just millions of people. Well, that's so stupid, because then the bad guys know there's no guns. They're going to come in rape everybody.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we all do it. Mine is, here's my problem. I've been an old man since I was 22 because I don't like my own generation. I complain about that. So when I see this next one, I'm like, oh, God damn it, no. So my two have got to be, one being my own generation, is that the people that live at home well into their 30s, maybe even 40s. That one always kind of gets under my skin.
There was just a very famous case where a guy got kicked out of his parents' house at 30-something years old.
Right. Because of a court order.
Yes.
It was taken to court.
Yeah.
And he tried to sue him like, this is harassment.
Yeah.
Also, I'm not going to clean my room just because you tell me. You're not the boss of me.
Yeah, I got to fight for my right to party. Oh, he wouldn't know that song. But anyways, there's that. The other one is the hypersexualization of really young kids.
Okay.
Yeah.
That one is my old man moment. I mean, everyone can say, oh, the next generation has these stupid styles, whatever. But when I see a chick that, I'm sorry, not a chick, a kid, like 12, 12, 11, that is dressed like she is ready to go out and hoe it up at the fucking club, I start turning into like a conservative Christian
Where are your parents?
I'm like, holy Bible shit. Yeah, exactly. I'm like if you've ever like been in the grocery store and seen like someone walk past you like, oh, who's that? Turns around, it's like a fucking 12-year-old. Like, oh, how dare you? How dare you? Ew, ew, gross. Don't wear grown-up fucking sex clothes. Like it's their shorts that right up their ass. I don't care about like, oh, this next generation's styles are so stupid. Fuck stupid. That's fine. But don't allow it to be sexualized. We have a pedophile problem in this country.
Right, right. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. I don't even know that that's necessarily generational because you see that throughout time. Heck, it used to be.
No, it's definitely gotten worse.
It's definitely gotten worse.
I don't know if it's definitely gotten worse because there are times in history when it was just considered okay to have sex with children. And so, like,
he's
it's gotten
about
better
how they
in
dress,
that sense.
So it's definitely gotten worse.
Yeah. The pedophile thing probably is plateaued a long time ago. Speaking of which, did you hear about that congressional guy that was like, yeah, I'm a pedophile. What about it?
Oh, God. Yeah. He's running for an office in Virginia, I think.
Okay.
And he came out and said that he is a pedophile.
Right.
He supports the incel movement. He has written on his websites or whatever, he's written detailed accounts of when he used to rape his wife, who they got divorced.
Okay.
Over custody, during the custody battle, he simply bowed out. Like, he wasn't determined unfit. He was just like, I'm over it.
Okay.
But he shores what else? He says that women should be property, that fathers should rape their daughters. Just the most disgusting things. And
like,
he's
so
running for office.
Well, wait, hold on. I got to ask this. Did he really say fathers should rape their daughters? Because that sounds pretty outlandish.
Yeah. He said it with more words than that.
But. Yeah, it was a roundabout way. So is this guy just a troll?
Well, no, it could be. So here's the thing, and this is what I'd be curious about. Did he say, I have sex with children, or did he say, I'm a pedophile?
What he said, because he writes pedophile literature. Like he does the Dear Penthouse for pedophiles.
Right.
Yeah.
And people are like, okay, what's with that? And he's like, oh, it's just a fantasy. He's like, so, all right, so none of this has ever happened? He's like, well.
Okay.
He said something like, a little bit of both.
Yeah,
something to that effect.
It's a little bit of fantasy, a little bit of a rapist.
Because what I would say is this, and we don't like to think in these terms, and nobody likes to talk about this because it sounds like you're trying to defend pedophiles, but here are the facts. And I wasn't aware of this until recently either, but most pedophiles do not molest children, and most child molesters are not pedophiles.
Right. No, I found that out too. It's the pedophilia thing is like, I don't want to hurt kids, but something in me is very attracted to him.
It would be like, you know, I can't control that I'm attracted to large ladies, right? That's just part of my makeup. It doesn't mean I'm going to cheat with my wife with some big lady, right?
Right.
So that's the difference. And then meanwhile, most people who hurt kids are actually sociopaths, psychopaths.
They're
who
like,
just,
oh man, this is going to fuck them up forever. They're going to remember me forever.
It's a crime of opportunity.
Yeah.
These are people without empathy, and therefore they don't care who they hurt, and therefore a child who just happens to be physically weaker is an easier target.
Right.
It's the hurt gazelle at the back of the pack.
Yeah.
And so they go for it. So if what that guy was saying is, I am a pedophile, but I don't act on these urges. I'm cursed with this. I cannot do anything. It's no different than anything else. And I promise you, I won't act on it. Then I actually kind of have some sympathy for that guy at that point.
Yeah. You know,
if what he's saying is, I'm going after kids, then fuck that dude. What's he doing?
There's a lot of pedophiles with a conscience that say, that advocate, like, I should be chemically castrated so I don't have these things anymore.
There's a kid who like, I think he went to UCLA. He started a support group and he's like, listen, I have these urges. I'm never going to act on them. I want to make it public so people know I have these urges so that it gives me more accountability. And I want to start a group to help other people who have these urges not act on them.
Yeah.
And I think that's super, like, that. Not only is that moral, that's like a great goal. I'm going to help other people not do something
you heard
that
it
will
first.
Ruin
Bonnie
lives.
Backs a pedophile. Yeah. No, but that's the kind of stigma that yeah. comes around. I think that's a great organization, too, if it helps protect kids, ultimately.
Right. He is actually, he wrote some, like Troy was saying, he wrote some fan fiction about father-daughter incest. Yeah. And about raping his ex-wife repeatedly. And he was asked by a reporter whether there was a grain of truth in the essays. And he said there was, and suggested that it's not uncommon for women to have rape fantasies. He's like, hey, this is what chicks want.
Well, first of all, that is technically true. That isn't uncommon, and you shouldn't shame anybody because they have those fantasies.
But the part where they said, is there a grain of truth to this?
But
he said
but
yes.
The grain of truth could be that he had less than consensual sex with his wife. It doesn't mean that his grain
Who
of truth...
Who ended up killing herself, by the way, because of the abuse.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she committed suicide.
And I'm not justifying that that's okay either, but I am saying that that isn't necessarily him saying I had sexual relationships with my daughter, which should be an instant jail time. If you admit that you are having some kind of sexual relationship with your daughter, you should be in jail instantly.
His list of things that he supports reads like this is the worst thing a person could say, and each one is worse than the next.
Uh-huh.
Like the top one is he wants to legalize the possession and distribution of child pornography.
Not a good idea. Child pornography hurts people. That's
he also
right.
He supports benevolent white supremacy, and he called Adolf Hitler a hero.
What exactly would be benevolent white supremacy?
Right, I know, right? Yeah.
Hey, as long as we're just in this tossed salad of horribleness, can I say one thing about the rape fantasies thing? Huh. Is that, like, God, the horrible men like this are like, hey, women have these rape fantasies. Yeah, in their head.
Sort of.
In their head, the rapist looks like Brad Pitt, and right. And she kind of knows him. And
maybe.
It's not what it actually looks like in real life. Can I just put that out there?
Yeah, but also, let's just, anybody's allowed to have whatever fantasies they want. Not acting on them is the only, if it's harmful to others, is the only important part. But if a woman has a brutal rape fantasy or rape fantasy with it, none of that is bad, and they shouldn't be shamed for it, nor does it mean
Correct.
That they want to actually be raped.
Right.
Right. There's a world of difference.
So it's okay to admit that those exist, but not say that that means that that's okay to do to somebody.
Yeah. This is like, remember, you guys don't remember, but you learn in school, whatever, when George Wallace, the assassination attempt, sure. way back then. Why doesn't someone try to shoot this guy? Like, why can't we bring that back? You know what I mean?
Bobby, you did a show recently. How'd that go?
Dude, I had like one of the best shows ever. I did the Nerd Night show, which was really interesting. People that came up to talk before me talked about how airplanes generate lift and a very interesting sociological study of dive bars, which included Small Bar and Tower Bar, Dave, both places cool. you've worked, both of which were neat, but it was fantastic. It's one of those times where you look for a long time and you really find your people. Like, that audience was my people for sure. Like, not only were they awesome and laughed at everything and stuff, they just were super interested. I couldn't leave. So after the set, after the thing was over, I was packing up, and I just had person after person coming up and be like, oh, did you think about this? How about this? I really like this part. And I was like, this is awesome. This is like when I'm sitting next to Patrick DeGear when I open for him, and everybody's okay. coming and talking to him, and yeah. you're sitting there and they walk by you. I get to be him for once.
Yeah, no, this is those moments that you fantasize about when you start comedy, but then don't come for
yes.
a very long time,
yes.
if ever.
I'm yes. honestly surprised that you had trouble finding your audience. You could ask me or Ryan. We both would have said nerds.
Nerds.
Your audience is nerds.
Well, I mean, obviously, nerds are my audience and my demographic, but to have them all concentrate in one place. Usually it's like I'm picking out the 5 to 10% of nerds in a given audience, but the concentrate, and it was standing room only in the back, like everything was filled up and then standing in the back, so it was packed and it was awesome. They were just a great audience. They came up and talked to me afterwards. We actually ended up having to get kicked out of the venue because even though the show ended an hour before.
There was an incident.
Yeah, we got into a fight. We talked about pedophilia. No, they kept coming up and talking to me. So it was really interesting. And then I even had one step up as far as like, oh, I think this is the greatest show I've ever done. And then you get that one cherry on top, which is the girl came up and she said, I just want you to know I'm a huge fan of your podcast, Science Faction. I absolutely love it. And me, with low self-esteem, my immediate...
Oh, you listen to the Degenerate Podcast, right. don't you? Gross.
No, my immediate thought was, you're lying. You're totally lying. Like, I mentioned it in my presentation. You're just saying that yeah. now to start a conversation.
You're
totally lying.
Me.
And so my immediate reaction wasn't, oh my God, thank you. It was, tell me what this bit is called when I ask questions to David. She's like, it's called I Call BS. And I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome.
Oh, yeah. So, okay.
It's like when a cute chick talks to a bunch of gamer nerds. I'm a gamer.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, you're not.
Yeah. How do you beat Zelda?
No. Moreover, it's like sometimes I had in my early 20s when a really hot girl would come up to me at the bar and hit on me. I'm like, oh, what's your angle?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, you want me to go outside so your boyfriend can beat me up and take my car? No.
Yeah, because even when we do get like nice tweets or fan mail or anything, it's almost always from some other part of this country or some completely other country. Like, we love Science Faction in Russia. And so like to have somebody come up and be like, oh, I love your show and that's why I came here. I'm like, what?
Bobby, yeah. Let me ask you some things about this, because as someone who's been through that before, uh-huh. How did it make you feel? Uncomfortable, elated, maybe a combination?
Confused at first.
Well, obviously, once your self-esteem was overridden, right. And you realized, all right, this is a legitimate fan.
I felt great, and I wished I would have taken more advantage to talk to her, because once I quizzed her, and she's like, yeah, and then she just kept walking away. I was like, oh, I think I have some swag I could give you. Oh, damn it, she's gone.
Oh, yeah, so you blew that one.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, but it did make me feel very good. That's an incredibly validating thing to have somebody come up and say that to
it
you.
It is a very weird feeling when that happens.
Yeah.
And as people that, I think all of us were raised to think we were less than. So,
sure.
I mean,
the right way. That's how you raise kids.
Yep. You wouldn't be living at home, say that much. Or raping other kids. No, but there's an adjustment period with that, because first of all, your main concern is not feeling like a pompous douche.
Yeah.
Who would even refer to them as a fan? The only person I will say I had a fan talk to me to is my wife, because like I got tired of being like, okay, a person who I do not know, who may have known of me
yeah.
from maybe Facebook or the podcast, came up to me like, oh, a fan. Like, no, a friend. So, but yeah, I got tired of doing that. So with her, I'm like, will I sound like a douche if I just categorize these group of people and say, oh, a fan talked to me?
Right.
And she's like, yeah, that's fine. To everyone else, it's a person who may know me from, I don't know them though.
Right.
So there's that. And it's very weird too, because if you're probably gonna get more and more of this now that it's happened once.
Is yeah.
You'll get the people that know you, but you don't know them,
yep.
And they forget that.
Yep.
They forget that. And because like you have this show where we talk about our lives every single week, and a couple of times people have come up to me and just started rattling off facts about me, and Dave was there for some of it. And
like, what are you, a PI? Are you about to serve me? Get the fuck out of here.
Runs.
And they forget like to say, oh, no, I don't know you at all. I just listen to your show. Like, the people go like, hey, what's up, Ryan? I'm like, oh, fuck. Man, there's a lot about 2006 I don't remember. Hey, man. And they'll be like, yo, man, how's Rufus? Like, oh, he knows my dog. Has he been over there?
Is this the vet? What is that?
No.
Who is this guy?
Oh, man, how's Aaron? Did her foot get healed from breaking it? Like, oh, shit, that was recent. Oh, shit. I don't even have time to blame this on. And then I'll be in a conversation with this guy for 2.5 hours.
And then the guy's like, hey, you're running low on toilet paper in the guest bathroom. Oh, shit.
We did do an episode about that with Big Frog when you were gone. So anyway, yeah, that does get very weird. But, I mean, it's flattering.
It's great.
It's what the goal is when you get into some sort of performance art of some kind. But at the same time, if you're not a complete narcissist douche, it's a little bit like, how do I convey I'm not a piece of shit, pompous asshole?
It also makes me very happy that I did not find that early in comedy, because I think that would ruin you. If you found that early in comedy, the people who love you, laugh hysterically, tell you how much they appreciate your work, and like they come up, oh yeah, we listen to this thing that you do. If you had that early on, it would make all the hard shit you have to do to be successful in comedy impossible. There's no way you could do late night bar shows and that kind of shit.
That's part of why bringers, for the most part, are garbage people.
Yes.
Because they have, for lack of a better term, fans. They have this core group of people that fall into all their shows and do this shit and build up their ego and make them think they're amazing.
Yeah. It's good to have that period. I actually feel really blessed that I had such, you know, all these periods of just horrible shows and hard times and stuff. Because, you know, as you go, you craft eventually what your audience will be and what your routine will be and what you will do as a comic. And I am kind of moving towards that area. And as I do, I will narrow that fan base. But I am very happy for a lot of the late nights in shitty bars where you're talking to nobody. People are screaming at you from the stage. All of those make everything not only better, but make you better at doing what you want to do eventually for your people.
Right.
It is always great when you find that niche, you know? And some people are too niche. Like, I feel like some of these niche shows are just people that can't hack it in comedy, so they're creating these niches for themselves. Like, mm-hmm. Hey, we're doing a show. It's the minority women who are also vegan. So I feel like those,
I think I actually, by the way, I saw a poster for that show.
I'm sure you have. So like, I think it's some people be like, okay, well, you know, in this biased town, I may not be considered the top 10, but of all the comedians who are a minority lesbian woman and also vegan, I'm top 3. Okay,
yeah.
Of all the
top 3 in East County.
Of all the overweight Asian male comics who are also pedophiles but don't act on it, yeah. I am top 5, man. I rule that niche. So I mean, it's possible to get a little bit too down the rabbit hole with the niche, but like, when it comes to like a comic that is focused on science and nerd shit like yeah. You know, or someone that is focused is a little bit more of a punk rock comic, you know, it's fun because there are comics that can just win over every crowd.
Yeah.
And we'll never be those guys. No. A big part of becoming a comic or any type of entertainer is realizing when you're not that guy.
Yeah.
All right. There can only be one best per city. But when you find your audience, they will love you more than all those crowds love the guy that's just widely accepted.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. I knew right from the get-go it was going to be great, too, because I have some science jokes that I throw out in the beginning of sets sometimes to see the crowd reaction, to see how many science jokes I should tell. Right. And I have two specifically that I consider like very, very conceptual jokes that would be very hard to get without a good science background. And usually if I'm lucky in a very, very crowded place, I might get one or two giggles. This place erupted. And when I hit these off the top, and I was like, oh, this is going to be a good set.
Someone in the audience is like, what is the deal with Schrodinger's cat? This is great.
It was a Schrodinger's cat joke, actually. It was, I like smart audiences because I can tell my science jokes. Otherwise, I have problems with it. Like, I'll tell my Schrodinger's cat joke, and I both get laughs and don't get laughs at the same time. And that's the reaction I usually get.
Yeah. You lost me.
Yeah. But it's good. That's what you also need. That's another good message to niche comics. You need some gauging jokes so that you can tell. Every once in a while, you toss it out. In a regular crowd, you'll get a decent amount of laughter. You're like, oh, there's some people here in my niche. I could play on this.
Yeah.
But most of the time, you go, okay, I understand now that we're not going to do any more of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wouldn't go so far as to say I have fans at all, but there's plenty of shows. Because you guys know, I work pretty dark.
Yeah.
Most of my tour is really dark. A lot of shows, even when I do really, really well and the audience is laughing, a lot of shows when we're standing in line at the end greeting everybody,
yeah.
I have people come up to me and almost whisper like, you were really funny. Like yeah. It's some secret shame that they have the dark comedy, you know? And I always feel good when I get one of those. Like, ah.
You're the pedophile label of comedy. Like, we enjoyed it, but don't tell anybody. We're not going to act on it, we promise.
It's like the guys that like secretly like Howard the Duck, the movie. Like, actually, I think it's a good movie. Yeah, me too. I'll never stop giving it a shit for it.
Listen, I'm not going to say this out loud, but Coors Light is my favorite beer. I'm just going to say it. It's a fact. I'm sorry. It's just how my taste buds work.
Yeah. Oh, so by the way, I don't know if you guys saw this. There's been a couple... It's hilarious to me when big businesses really focus on their Twitter presence. I mean, we all saw the success that Wendy's has had by doing these snarky little things. They hired a very sharp-witted social media guy to throw shade at McDonald's, and it gets
very funny. Very entertaining.
It's pretty funny, you know. It's all in good fun. And first of all, I love it that people have tried to copycat it poorly. For number one, like. We talked on this show about what happened with me with Alaska Airlines. Yep. I'm like, you guys fucked me over. The guy's like, hey, well, that's because we have a loophole how to steal your money. And like, literally, like, dozens of people are like, what? And they delete the tweet and, like, send me an apology. I can see that guy's fucking demeanor. Like, oh, man, I'm going to be on Yahoo News tomorrow. Brilliant Alaska Airlines social media guy claps back. And he's just a fucking moron. But anyways, what's happened is, first of all, Buffalo Wild Wings Twitter got hacked.
Well, either that or they took the edgy a little too far.
Maybe they took an Ambien.
What was their tweet?
At least one N-word.
Let me pull it up.
There was a long list, but I only looked at a couple of them.
Let's just give them the benefit of the doubt and say they got hacked.
Oh, obviously. Either that or an employee fucked them over intentionally.
I think it's usually more that. They always say hacked, but
in either way, the company is not really the one at fault.
Yeah.
Although they're the one that gets the flack.
Yeah. Yeah, there should be some distinction between companies that, like, one of their employees went rogue and then companies where, it's just our policy, man. Yeah. What do you want?
Yeah, like, for example, CrossFit. Like the brand CrossFit, there was a gym in Indianapolis where they had a pride event going on.
Uh-huh.
The gym canceled the event, and then one of the higher ups in CrossFit, like a VP or something, he tweeted in support of them canceling the event.
He's like, yeah, that's right. We support God at this.
Yeah. CrossFit fired him.
And they were like, oh my God, he is not in charge anymore. Anyway, now here's the exact tweets from this little period here, which I don't know what time of night this took place in, but reminder that Madeline McCain has been missing for 9 years. Fuck niggas. Next tweet.
Okay.
Reminder that some Twitter handle is a racist coon. Next one. Fucking niggas. I hate them. Next one. Yeah, this was not Buffalo.
I feel like that wasn't in their company handbook on orientation day.
And then I think the whoever hacked this, their autocorrect went off the wrong way. Reminder that Wendy's touches kids. Stupid knock on us. Yeah, they didn't even they did not nail that one. But Come anyways, Kofifi. I still think that might have been his Twitter password. He's just like, oh shit, it's live. Anyways, so there was that, and then like you said, yeah, the CrossFit. Personally, I think that companies get really excited when competing companies say something either racist or homophobic. Like, every time Chick-fil-A says something anti-gay, I bet KFC is like, yes!
Yeah,
they did it! Hey, everyone, we love everybody.
You know what else? Open on Sundays, motherfuckers!
Yeah, right. Sunday's a banner day at KFC.
Shores, I got to ask your advice because you've gone through something that I am just going through, which is...
Tell the police immediately. He's a monster, and he's going to do it to other kids.
Hey, it's not your fault, okay?
So I literally, just this week, we looked like we got an accepted offer on a piece of property. Now, my wife and I currently own our house, but it was a weird situation where I married her after she bought the house, so I just married into the house. Like, I've never actually gone through the process.
Oh, gold digger. All right.
Yeah, I've never gone through the process of actually purchasing this thing. Is it always insanely nerve-wracking where even though you know you've made the right choice and you've done the math 1,000 times, the second you sign that paperwork, you're like, oh, fuck, did I just make the biggest, most expensive mistake of my life?
You know, Aaron went through that. I mean, let me remind you that it was all my money that we were putting
right
down.
Right.
And I shouldn't say that. We're married. You know, whatever is mine is hers. Actually, not at the time we were
dating. Yeah,
except the last beer. Don't touch the last beer.
Oh, you touched my last Yingling. These are shipped in from Philly. So anyways, let me remind you, we were living in the ghetto.
Yes, I live in the ghetto.
Living in the ghetto.
No, yeah.
You lived in different types of ghettos. You lived in white trash ghetto. I lived in prostitutes are literally 100 feet from my door and somebody sells
much
crack
better ghetto.
Outside.
I would much rather
ghetto.
A prostitute near my door than a white supreme who just got out that sells prison pride that chases your daughter down the street and you come out and surrounds you with his boys. Okay?
Yeah, Ryan lived next to the guy who hacked Buffalo Wild Wings Twitter.
Yeah. Like he has those kinds of skills.
Yeah.
So anyways, all right, so... We not only lived in this terrifying place where literally we'd come out in the morning to go to work and there'd be vomit on our doorstep. Someone had been partying there.
Right. I also live in a college neighborhood, so that totally describes my place as well.
Just violence, and it was, my girls couldn't go outside at night. It was horrible. And then we find this amazing house in a great suburb, you know, and we're ready to change our lives. And by the way, when we went to go into escrow, you have to meet with a notary.
Yeah.
And we met in a Burger King next to my house in the ghetto, where two tables away, literally, there was a pimp grooming three young girls. Like, you got, I remember as clear as day the things he was saying to them. Like, I hope they were over 18. I hope to God they were, but that I don't know. And he was saying, like, you girls are gonna be great at this, you know. You girls are gonna, you're gonna have a lot. You're gonna have a lot of nice things. And I'm like, I knew it was happening. He wasn't coming out and saying it, but it was very clear it was happening at table number three.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he was wearing a Lyft T-shirt.
Yeah,
training new drivers
or Herbal Life, which is almost worse.
Oh no, I'd prefer prostitution.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was happening. A fight occurred in the Burger King as we're with this like this scared like old turtle lady who's helping us sign all our papers to go into escrow. And even after that, because my whole thing was, we're fucking out of here.
Yeah.
We're fucking out of here. We just bought a house as of this night. Erin came home and cried.
Yeah.
She cried because she's like, it's so much more than what we're paying in rent, even though mortgage goes in your own pocket, rent goes to someone else's.
Right.
She's like, oh my God. Like, how are we going to come up with an extra, $450 a month? How are we ever going to do that? You know, oh God. And
just talk to that pimp. He can hook you up a little side project.
You're going
to
be great at it. I get 90%. It's protection. Yes, absolutely. There's two types of ways you look into it, either excited or scared, which are very similar feelings.
No, I'm both. I'm certainly really excited. And I've done the math. I've actually researched this property for like 8 months. I know exactly what we're going to do and how it's going to be valuable. And it's going to be way, way more valuable than we buy it for and all that kind of stuff. But there is still that thing where you're like, I have never written a check that had six figures in it before. Like, this is fucking intense.
Oh, you know, sure. Now, Bobby, let me scale it back down to something you're probably used to, is How do you feel when you're about to go on stage, not at a bar, mm-hmm. not at a local club that we've played 1,000 times, but at a place where a big opportunity awaits yes. you, where it's like, oh man, if I kill the night, oh man, I'm going to have more bookings. I'm going to have yep. all this. And then you realize that there's another side of that coin yep. and you're like, oh, but if I don't do good, oh, look at that last casino gig I did. On the way up, the guy was like, hey, by the way, man, all these casinos are linked. So, like, if you do good here, like, it gets out that you're a solid guy, so we don't even have to see video anymore. I'm like, right. amazing. And then as I'm in my suit, yeah. waiting on the wings, watching my feature blow it, by the way, yeah. all of a sudden I thought, oh, but if I don't do good, like, it would be better if I didn't even come here.
Yeah.
Like, it would be better if they never saw me or knew my name, because now
I Puckett's mean, Annie runs away.
Yeah, you, I,
thank you. I've been Dave Callens. All right.
That thought,
I'll take it.
That thought crossed my brain as I was sitting in the casino room, like standing outside the showroom in the casino, smoking a cigarette in my suit, waiting to go on. All of a sudden, I was like, dude, just run. Like, this is, at least you could think maybe one day you can play this kind of place again, but no, you're going to blow it. It's going to be bad. Remember what happened? No. This is not going to go good. Like, why is there so much on the plate?
Yeah.
That's what you're going through.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
It's either going to go amazing or horribly.
Yeah. Or somewhere in between, but, no. you know.
Dude, I've owned houses before when I was married, and I have this weird combination of a lack of impulse control plus a sort of fuck it, it'll work out attitude.
So you like bought houses the way you buy gum at the cash register.
Just like, I wasn't worried about whatever. But no, the thing I remember most about the first time I bought a house, my parents were gracious enough to help us with the down payment, gave us some money. But they live in Michigan. We're out here. We had to have 4 signatures and 4 initials on every form. So we did some paperwork so I could do their initials and signature. Yeah. So you've seen the stack of mortgage documents. I had to do 3 signatures on every page. And I was just like, Jesus Christ, this is the worst thing. Can we stop buying the house? Can we not do this? Yeah. I just don't want to sign this much.
No, but when you buy a house, it does feel like you're buying a coffin because you realize, oh, 30 years. Oh, shit. Yeah. So anyway, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Enjoy your coffin is what he's saying.
Yeah, well, especially me, because there's not even a coffin there. I'm buying the space for the coffin because I'm just buying land and building a house.
No, when I bought this house, I was super gung-ho for like 6 months. Like, I'm going to fix up everything. Yeah. I'm going to build a deck. I'm going to – and all of a sudden now, like, if something goes wrong, I'm like, just leave it. It's like, all right, my sink broke. I'm like, I guess we're not using that sink anymore.
Aaron comes home one day, and she's like, did you fix the broken cabinet door? And he's just pouring gasoline around the house with a flare in the other hand. What? No.
Yeah, I turned into the dead from Pet Sematary. Just like, fucking burn it down.
Hey, you treat your house like you treat your body as you get older. Like, when you're younger, you go to the doctor, take care of yourself. As you get older, you're like, well, I guess my elbow just clicks now.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because there is that weird thing where, like, you're about to put the paperwork in and there's this thought in your head, kind of like what you're talking about with that casino gig. Like, I could just rip these papers up and this would all be over. Like, there would be no consequences. We can be out of this. My life will be exactly the same as it was yesterday if I just rip these papers and run out the door. And what's funny is I got that feeling every once in a while right before a fight. Right. So you'd be walking up to the ring, especially a busy fight in a place that's not your hometown. So you'd go to Reno and there'd be, you know, a couple thousand people in the stands.
Right.
And you're walking up to the fight and they're booing you and in the whole 9 yards.
Sure.
And you get this thing like, I could run right now.
You were the heel. I love it.
Yeah. I could run right now. I'd be fine. What's funny is I only thought that for the longest time for, you know, 3 or 4 years of college. I thought like, man, that's a crazy overwhelming urge to just run. But, you know, at least, you know, it's never happened. And then my senior year, while I was watching the walkout during regional championships, some kid just turned and ran in the middle of the walkout. And I was like, oh, it does happen every once in a while. Every once in a while, it hits that point where somebody just, hey, literally, he was like walking. You just saw his eyes get bigger and bigger. And then, like, your coaches are right next to you, too, as you're walking. And they're like holding you, pumping you up. Yeah, let's go, let's go. And he just turned around and ran. And the best part that I love is that the coach didn't realize that it happened, his head coach. And his head coach just kept walking as if he was right next to him for a good 5 or 10 steps. Meanwhile, he turns around, there's like one of those Western doors.
I wonder how much that happens with comedy. Ever think about that?
Yeah. Oh, I bet you. I know it's happened at the Kumite before where somebody is coming up, like they're supposed to be on deck, and they come to me in between the set, and they're like, I can't, I got to go, blah, blah, blah. And they don't give me enough explanation, but I'm pretty sure.
It's nerves.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's nerves. Like, I don't know, maybe their mom died and they just got a phone call, but I think it's nerves.
I wonder if Bobby acts like George C. Scott and Patton, like, wow, you're nothing but a coward.
Yeah. No, I always go, are you sure, bud? Because, you know, I mean, you're going to be up. You're going to get time. And what I'm really saying is, are you sure? Because I have to find somebody else to be on deck. And I would have liked to know that before you put your fucking name in the bucket. I also had a much less stressful experience, which is I got to do my buddy's bachelor party this weekend. Ryan, I know you have one coming up.
Right.
We went up to a cabin in Julian, just me and my buddies. We're all long-term friends.
Gay stuff happened?
Oh, dude, yeah. But I mean, we just call it stuff.
Okay.
It's just,
yeah.
You know, I don't know why you have to label it like that.
Sorry.
A lot of hiking, drinking, smoking pot, running around. We had bows and arrows and tomahawks and cornhole and all that kind of fun stuff.
Okay, so the gay stuff.
Yeah. I told you, cornholing. Okay. It is a funny thing because I was the best man, so I had to plan all the stuff right. And get everything up. But also,
you were until the bachelor party. It's like you're not in charge
anymore. But also, the best man duty is kind of like the implicit one: is you pay for everything, and then the other guys pay you back, right? Like that's kind of the thing. If something like I had to put the deposit for the cabin down, I had to pay the cabin, and then people paid me back, which is fine, right? Except for I had the situation where two guys bailed out the week before, one guy the day before.
Oh.
And he's just like, yeah, sorry, I can't make it, got work. And it's like, all right, but I mean, we were dividing this among eight people and now it's six. So basically what you're telling me is eat $100 or maybe eat the whole cost because now is everybody else willing to pay more? We agreed on a price beforehand.
Right.
Now do I tell everybody else, hey, the price is upped, or do I just eat that cost? Like, what do you do in those situations?
Vigilante justice. Please tell me it was justice.
No. We ended up working everything out. But what's funny is in a lot of situations where you have a party like that, and both the guys who bailed out were the only two guys I didn't know going into this thing. It was the groom's friends that I didn't know on the other side. Usually if that happens, you just could be like, oh, well, fuck that guy. That guy's an asshole or something. I still got to go see these people at a party, right? You still have to go to the wedding that these people by definition will be at. So you can't be like, man, fuck you. You just got to be like, right.
The two guys who bailed, like when the second one made the phone call to Bobby, the other guy was there with me, hangs up the phone. He's like, kings of pranks.
Now, Bobby, how'd you handle it?
I think I handled it pretty well because what I wanted to text them was, well, you know what's funny is there's nine of us. Obviously, the groom's not paying, but it was going to be split between eight of us. We had to get a different cabin because they insisted on going, right? Because one of them was like a relative of the groom's and his wife was like, hey, you need to go on this bachelor party. He's like, okay, yeah, I need to go on the bachelor party. And so we're like, okay, well, we were going to get this seven-person cabin, but now we have to get one that fits nine people, right?
Oh.
So we had to spend way more money to get that cabin, which we would not have gotten if we didn't know they were going to be there. And then also we could have changed if you would have told me, you know, a little bit more than a week ahead of time. So I really had the temptation to be like, you know, hey, thanks for fucking us over. That's great of you.
Yeah.
Or and the guy who's like, oh, I didn't get somebody called me in for work. It's like, bullshit. You know, you didn't ask for the day off and you just asked for it today. And they said no.
Right.
No, that does not happen. You don't say I'm going to my buddy's bachelor party and I'm going to be gone for this weekend. And they just go, sorry, Rick here says you got to work.
Fucking
so
Rick.
Part of me wanted to like stick it to him. But I'm like, fuck, it's going to be the groom's fucking wedding, right? So I can't cause this weird situation where I talk shit to these people who I then see at the most important day of my friend's life. I can't be that guy. So instead, you kind of just got to eat it. You got to be like, all right, okay.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I don't know if you experienced this with renting some stuff for the bachelor party, but I've been looking at like big cabins because we have a big kind of party going up. You know, you guys are both invited to it. So I'll find this really big cabin up there in the woods. And it'll have like a pool and like, you know, 10 rooms. And it's like, all right, $900. I'm like, yeah, but $900 split like 10 ways.
Yep.
I'm like, that's great.
Yeah. Yep.
And then I enter like 10 people as sleeping. They're like, oh, now it's up to 1600. I'm like,
yeah.
Well, you said 900. Well, I didn't know you're bringing. I didn't know you're gonna fill all the rooms.
Yeah,
I'm like, no. Part of your advertisement is, yeah, I know it's $900, but there's 10 rooms. Sleeps 10. Like, oh, cool, nice. Yeah, no, we're not charging you that price.
I had an even better one where it's like it was $500 a night, and I was like, okay, perfect. There's gonna be, you know, eight people paying into this. This will be just fine. And then I type it in, and it's like, all right, your two night total is $1,700. And I was like, hold on there. Let me do some math real quick. 500 plus 500 does not equal 17. And then it's like, yeah, but then we add a $250 cleaning charge, and then there's a $300 use charge, and then we have like, and it was all
it's
these
like
things.
Ticketmaster rentals.
And so I just sent the person a message, and I was like, "We want to rent your cabin. We're not paying that much money. Will you take this much money?" And eventually, they said yes.
Okay. No, my whole thing was with the $250 cleaning fee. I'm like, You don't know what kind of mess I'm going to make.
That's what I said. I said,
what if you get there and it's immaculate? I don't get any money back?
Yeah.
You just pocket that?
I would go
fuck
the other way.
You.
If you're charging me $200 for cleaning, we're going to give you something to clean up.
Oh, I'm shitting on the floor for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Did I mention I'll have mushrooms? Oh, don't tell the authorities. But yeah, but, oh yeah, oh, I'm making a fucking mess.
This one was a dope cabin.
Leave some paper towels.
I'll give you the hookup for this cabin. Maybe you'll consider it because it's right on the border of the state park. So the backyard.
Is the cornhole included?
Yes. The backyard leads right into the state park.
We might find a tomahawk or two.
So my buddy, and he's this guy I've known since he's my oldest friend. I've known him since we started the fourth grade together. And I wanted to do something really special for him. So I set up this entire event that he didn't know about where he gets to be like.
Well, he gets kidnapped and he has to escape.
Kind of. it was more like he gets to be a secret agent for the day. And he's Mexican. So we called it Operation Juan Bauer. Nice. Similar to Jack Bauer, and he got a quote unquote phone call the first morning that was from one of our other friends who couldn't make it because they're out of town, dressed as a supervillain, laying out this entire elaborate plot, and he had to follow all the clues. Meanwhile, like, you know, shooting goons with an airsoft gun and taking out targets with the bow and arrow, and then eventually, and the best part is after kind of accomplishing all this stuff, all these different like stations and stuff, one of the guys who was in on this with us, who was in the bachelor party, had been really mean to this guy's about to be wife. He had been like a horrible jerk to him in many, many different ways. And
wait, you lost me.
So one of the guys who was at the bachelor party had been really mean to the
groom's
bride to be.
Right, now, okay. Who was this mean guy to the groom?
A friend. A friend of all of ours, an old friend.
And now, our listeners want to know how had he been mean?
He is the, I mentioned a few times, he's my sociopath friend.
And yeah, I was going to guess that's who it was.
I remember him. Reoccurring character.
He said a whole bunch of horrible things to her before. One of the worst things he's done, on top of saying really mean things to her face, is when my buddy was going to propose and me and Damien Mercado were getting ready to help him. We were getting all the stuff ready to help him propose. He was going to go do it out on the beach with flowers and stuff. So we're getting all these flowers ready to go set up for their walk. And this guy, the sociopath guy, comes in and he's like, what are you guys doing? We told him, oh, we're helping our buddy David get engaged. And he's like, no, you do not help him do that. And we're like, dude, he's really happy about this. He's going to ask the woman who, by the way, has his child to marry him. He's really happy about this. And he's like, you can stop this now. If you sabotage this engagement, then you could keep him from marrying her. Like, he was literally trying to convince us to sabotage our friend's engagement.
Now,
every time you tell a story about this guy, I have to wonder why you're still friends with him.
Grandfather, I don't make that choice. He gets other people invite him. He's just, it's the way
no,
it
goes.
Why
no.
does anyone invite him?
I have it.
No, man.
But you will like this part because this is a very vigilante justice moment.
You hit him with a tomahawk.
Decided that part of Operation Juan Bauer should be this guy, the sociopath, getting punished for the horrible things he said and did to our groom's bride-to-be. And so this guy knew that, according to the script of Operation Juan Bauer, he would be on the porch where the evil goons were torturing him. He would be chained up on the porch and Juan Bauer would come rescue him. So Juan Bauer comes and he takes out the goons. But then, unbeknownst to the guy who's tied up, the sociopath who's tied up, part of it is actually a waterboarding where we then draped a towel over his head and poured water on him while he yelled something along the lines of, how much of a bitch do you think she is now? And it was very satisfying. It was incredibly satisfying.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's
funny. Yeah. So like we threw an impromptu waterboarding in the middle of the whole event.
Nice.
I like that. You got to get rid of this friend, though.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you what, though. He got a girlfriend who's actually like pushing him towards humanity, and it's a really...
You can't do that with a sociopath.
You think so, but it's making progress.
That's her project. You guys are no longer involved.
No. He is fooling her and you. That's how they work.
I don't know, man. I've seen positive improvements, I got to say. I think there's something
to it. Well, you couldn't see anything but. I mean,
yes,
he's such a piece of shit.
Very true. But I've known him for 20 plus years and I've never seen improvements before. So I'm just saying, you know, something's pushing him in a good direction. Maybe he needs the support to help keep going or maybe more waterboarding. I'm not sure.
Well, either way, good luck with that. All right, let's call it a week. I'm Ryan for Dave and Bobby saying see you next week. Cruising with the Twos. Wait, I have a show coming up. Wait, it's already sold out at Burning Beard. All right, never mind. See you next week.
Open on Sundays, motherfuckers.
Yeah. Ooh,
ooh, yeah, time passing by. Motherfucking time is passing by.